All right. Hello, everyone, and welcome to Nom Talk Review, part of Nom Talk Network. On this show, we review the latest film or a wonderful celebrated throwback, celebrating a milestone while eating and drinking our favorite snacks and drinking as well. So please don't forget that we have merch. You can find it in the About section on Twitch. Subscribers to our Twitch channel get discounts, so be sure to subscribe. I am your host, Derek Murray, and right now I am enjoying a Celsius energy drink because I did not know I was going to be hosting until about 30 minutes ago, and Jeopardy is over, and I was ready to go to sleep. But I love Nom Talk, and I kind of love the crow, despite what you guys see for my rating. So we're definitely going to get into that. Really excited about it. And let me introduce the guests. So we will start with Kyle. How are
Hey.
you? And what are you eating and drinking?
So tonight I'm very basic because I had a huge, fantastic all-you-can-eat sushi breakfast or lunch for myself, because that's what we do here in Southern California. And so I'm just having a nice water, just a nice smart water because I'm basic. And if I decide for noms, I have the one thing you can't get at a sushi place, which is Reese's peanut butter cups.
Good
And
snack.
it's a
It's a
good thing you
good
can't
movie
because
snack.
they're too awesome. So, but yeah, I'm excited. Crow's one of my favorite movies. So I'm really like, I'm hyped.
Awesome. Well, thank you for joining. Let's go to Michael. How are you and what are you eating and drinking?
Hi, how's it going? Yeah, I'm pretty basic too. I'm just got a cup of water here and some homemade sugar cookies. I'm at my parents' house. I was here for Mother's Day, so still here. So, yeah.
Awesome.
Yep.
All right, and last but certainly not least, Eric Draven himself, Kenji. What are you
Hey.
snacking on tonight?
Well, unfortunately, I just hopped on and I had like a drink and a soda prepared, but you know what? I've got a little bit of something right here just chilling in the room. How about a little bit of the last remnants of some mixed nuts? How about
Perfect.
that?
Perfect. I love it. That is awesome. And thank you so much. Thank you, everybody, for joining. I'm very excited to get into this. And before we start, we are still fundraising for the Trevor Project with a goal of $200. So please be sure to go and donate so we can hit our goal. And now on to the show. As you might have noticed, it cannot rain all the time. And we are going to be talking about The Crow. We will talk a little bit about the reboot towards the end and get our feelings on that. But right now we're going to talk about the OG, really the only one that matters, and that is the 1994 The Crow. So I'm very excited to get into this. So let's just talk about how we felt watching the film when we first saw it, and then go ahead and give a little bit about your rating. So we'll go ahead and start with you, Kyle, since I see you first on the screen.
So, I first saw the sequel actually to The Crow. I saw City of Angels first, and then I saw the first one a little bit after that because in 1996 I was I think I was like 7, maybe 8. So I was very fascinated with this super dark gothic universe that, and something about the dreary borderline dystopian landscape of what was supposed to be a normal city, but I later learned was a comic book adaptation, really just kind of hit me. And I'll go into that later because that's one of the reasons why this movie is so completely near and dear to my heart. But I loved everything about it. I love the tragedy. I love the gothic love story. I love the look of the entire universe because it builds this really fascinating comic book adaptation universe that I don't think we've seen. There was this style to adaptate to comic book adaptations pre-MCU. Now I love the MCU. If you've watched the show, I love the MCU. I love it more than anything, but there was a style and a substance to pre-MCU comic book adaptations. From DC up and down that I don't think we see anymore. And this is one of those. And especially because most people don't know it was adapted from a comic. But everything about it from the real world from the look and the story to the real world tragedy, which I just to all of it, just A plus.
Okay. All right. Let's go on to Kenji. What is your rating? How did you first experience this film? And give us a little bit about your thoughts.
So I gave this film a 4 out of 5 popcorns because, yes, even though I'm dudded up like this, I still can see that it's not a perfect film. It's a great film, but it's not a perfect film. I first started off with the Crow originally, oddly, because when it first came out, I think I was 5, and my first introduction to the Crow was my uncle Craig had this poster on his wall in his room of it's that classic poster of
Oh,
Eric
yeah.
Draven where he's sitting on the throne and he's just kind of like brooding and stuff like that, and he's sitting on like an iron throne. But basically, that was my first introduction to the Crow. I was like, who is this guy? And then years later, there was the TV series that I just happened to stumble upon because I was home. I was in the 5th grade. I just had surgery on my ankles. And there's really very little to watch on television when you don't have cable. And it just happened to be one of the things that was on. And I was like, hey, this is kind of cool. And then I ended up getting into the movie after that. And of course, I learned more about Brandon Lee. And I was obsessed with his father Bruce, so like it just kind of trickled through, and that's how I became obsessed with this IP. So
Yeah,
yeah,
that's
there we go.
I love that you kind of took the Highlander approach where you went from like the movie and then the TV show, which nobody actually knew existed except for like 5 people in the world. I love that. It's great.
I think all 5 people are sitting in this
I
because
think
I
so.
know about
Yeah, I'm one of them. Yeah, exactly.
Oh, I love it. Michael, tell us a little bit about your experience with Crow and your rating.
Yeah, I was a teenager when this came out, and I loved it when it first came out. I was a big Bruce Lee fan, and so I was really following Brandon's career, looking forward to him, like, taking over Hollywood. And then all the tragedy happened, and I was devastated by that. But I had to see his last film, and I didn't know anything about the graphic novel at all. I still haven't read it, but I've watched this movie and this TV series. I don't think I could watch the sequels because to me it's just not the same without him, without Brandon. But I gave it a 5, and that's definitely due to a lot of nostalgia for me. This is probably the only movie I really gave a higher score because of the nostalgia, because it just hit me at a time where it was like very impressionable. And it shaped a lot of what I liked about movies at the time, and it came out at really, just a really good time. Like, I have fond memories of when going to see this movie and everything. So even though it was also kind of sad because of what happened, so yeah, that's why I give it a 5.
Yeah.
But I give it a
Well,
5 too. I forgot to say that. I'm sorry.
that Oh, it's fine. I'm gonna be that guy. Sorry. I gave it a 3 out of 5. But I want to be clear. I genuinely love this film. I have a lot of nostalgia for it as well. I was 12 when this movie came out. Not to date me too much. I was 12, and I remember I'd never actually seen the full movie until I was much, much older. But I remember I was at a friend's house, and all of the adults were watching this movie, and it was the pawn shop scene, which is just like so violent and so just it's one of the most gruesome scenes in the movie, in my opinion. But I just remember like hearing words I'd never heard before, seeing images I probably should not have been seeing because I was like sitting on the stairs watching it when I should have been upstairs, and I was just like, what is this? I need more of this in my life because this is unlike anything I've ever experienced. And then I can very clearly remember the controversy kind of miring overall everything and permeating every conversation. This was far, far before the internet. So rumors about what happened and how it happened and the superstitions and the comparisons to his father's untimely death and this one. And I mean, you think conspiracies are bad now? Imagine if we didn't have fact checking and people were just spouting stuff off randomly, and you just had to believe it. He's just, oh yeah, there's a ghost in the Lee
People are
family. Like,
still spouting off
I
random
know.
things when there is fact check. What are you talking about?
So I have had a lot of really good experiences with this film. I agree. Brandon Lee is just absolutely phenomenal in this movie. I think there's a very the tragedy really isn't just his untimely death, but just how much this movie was going to make him a star. This was hell-bent on putting him over. He is the crux of the film. He's absolutely incredible in this movie. And so I think overall, this is very much a vibes pick. I love the aesthetic. I love the production design. I love the gothic horror. Kyle, I love that you talked about this idea of, you know, the pre-Marvel adaptions, right? Because some of these things are incredibly dark. And if you don't know that that's where they're adapted from, they don't feel that way. And you get even your Batmans and your Blade Runners are all kind of working in this dystopian version of the world that we exist in. So it's dealing with all of our themes of tragedy and loss and grief and revenge, but it's miring it in this dark aesthetic and these very gothic horror styles. And I think this one takes that to another level. It really plays on the things that, you know, things like the Batman and Blade Runner kind of lay down, and then they're like, yo, we can go way dark. And The Crow does that. I do think that this film doesn't necessarily hold up. I think there are some things that I think pacing, I think the script is pretty wooden. I think some of the characters are kind of just baffling. Like, even though Michael Wincott is doing everything, like, just that man wins the overacting award, and that is not an insult. I am like, that is 100% a compliment. I freaking love Michael Wincott, and he's a fantastic villain as Top Dollar. I've got some reservations. I most of it is just removing those nostalgia goggles and just trying to watch the film for its merits. And it has a lot of merits, but it has a lot of flaws. So I had to kind of dip my rating down a little bit from the masterpiece everybody else has gone with. So that's my defense of my rating. Kyle, you look very confused. I would love to hear your rebuttal.
Me? Mm-hmm. Oh, no, I was, it deepened thought about the idea that, deepened thought about the idea of things that aren't really seen through a positive, because when you think about it, you can really look at Top Dollar and his sister and a lot of the stereotypes that they play into, that I cannot speak to in Asian culture, with her and then in the sequel, and I was just just thinking about that, and I was like, yeah, there's a lot there that could be unpacked
and she's not listening to the show, so I think we'll be okay. I want you all to know that I've met her and I've interviewed Bai Ling. She is just as weird in real life as she is in the movie, and I don't think she's actually acting. It was a very strange experience to interview her, and I was like, I'm not interviewing Bai Ling. I am literally interviewing Micah. I mean, this is happening.
We go. That makes me feel better.
there's some weird stuff going on in here. But I think it's them trying to push the limits of darkness. So, you know, and now that you kind of brought that up, let's just kind of talk about it a little bit. Let's talk about the story and pacing. Because there's some good things in here, and I think there's some bad things in here.
It's a straight up revenge film. It's got the gothic romance vibe to it. The bad guys are very much just cut and paste, you know, nothing special about them. I never did think about it, but you're right. There is a bit of a problem, or Kyle's right about the bit of the Asian stereotyping, which could be problematic. But overall, the pacing is not bad. It moves. I mean, I just rewatch it for this. So I remember just being in the theater and just, you know, being glued to my seat. And on the rewatch, I was like, huh, there are some pacing issues. There are some spots where it could be tighter, could be edited tighter. But overall, I think it flows in a way that, like, some movies today don't do that, you know what I mean? So it's like it even for then it was good. It was solid.
Okay. Kenji, what about yourself?
Well, it's interesting that when Mikey was pointing out the pacing issues, because I feel like a lot of that probably has to do with Brandon's unfortunate passing.
Yeah.
Because I mean, that in like, or like to put into perspective, that entire sequence where he revisits the apartment and finds Gabriel and has the flashbacks and realizes he can regenerate. That entire scene was done with his stunt double. Yeah. There's a reason why you don't see his face the entire time. And so, like, I just imagine just like, and like, even like they weirdly animated his face onto just the double's body for when the lightning flashes. So, like, even with that alone, just to use that as like, as like a tent pole, you can only imagine all the other things that they probably wanted to do, but then they couldn't. And then they were like, we have to try and use like whatever B-roll footage that we have to try and like piece together something. Cause like, it is really tragic. It makes you really wonder like what, like if this was, if the movie is this good, when something as tragic as what happened to on the set, and they were still able to put out something that was still as decent as this is, it makes you really wonder like what their overall true vision was going to be for this before it went completely, you know, before they had to change everything.
There's actually some critical analysis and some critical reception of reviews at the time that have actually said that some of those changes were an improvement on the story. So not that the absence of Brandon Lee somehow made the film better, but the things that they were able to kind of recapture and shift around without him actually ended up tightening up the film a little bit. I would love to see the completed vision. I think that's more where we need to be at. But there are definitely some that argue that whatever they made in his absence actually made the final version better. But Kyle, how do you feel about the story and pacing?
I never realized that it was pacing that was kind of irking my goat, because when I was a kid, because I saw it when I was not, like, I wasn't a child, so I kind of understood what I was going on, but I wasn't an adult, so I didn't really see the technical aspects of it. So I kept trying to fill in the gaps with, like, the weird etherealness that came with what Kenji was talking about with how they shot everything, which I really do think, you know, it would have... the tragedy that occurred would have made the movie 10 times better. Kenji basically nailed it. The tragedy that would have occurred that occurred made the movie 10 times better. Working with what they did, they made it more ethereal. It was almost it was a good piece of, it's hard to describe. It was like, it really got into your head and you really did feel like you were seeing something ethereal and strange. And then when you find out the tragedy about it, which you don't know until you actually learn the lore behind it, it made it very odd, and it really got into my head. And I've kept trying to justify the pacing issues by trying to make up this idea that it was a dystopian world and that like America had been shattered somehow and there was like all these different cities that were, because I didn't understand at all that it was supposed to be a real city, but I kept trying to fill in the gaps and the blanks. So it really drew me in more. But yeah, there's definitely pacing issues. There's but that's also, like I said earlier, that's 90s comic book adaptations. I mean, you can look at Batman and Robin, Batman Forever, and then you can look at the films that are made as homages to that, like Sin City, and you can really see the 90s era, how we adapted comics. And if you look back at comic book movie adaptations, you look at the Fantastic Four from the 60s and the Captain America from the 80s, like 60s too, and you look at the adaptations, like unto each generation an adaptation is born, and the next generation kind of has to look at it, you know what I mean? No
yeah,
idea.
Yeah, we have to look at it. We have to look at that thing.
I do like your read of you know, just that ethereal kind of vibe that it gives to this movie, because it does, you know, it does change the way that you watch it once you understand that it's a tragic movie with an actual tragedy, and those things are kind of coalescing together. It really does change the film, whether or not the things that they added actually make it better or not. Honestly, none of that matters, because you have to watch the film differently. And it kind of just takes on this new life of its own. So I think for me, the story itself is great. I love the darkness. I love the idea of, you know, just kind of this revenge through supernatural means. I love what Brandon brings to the role and the decisions that he makes as an actor. We're going to get to casting here last, because I think we can spend a lot of time talking about Brandon Lee and his work. So we'll save that one for last. But I think the story overall is pretty solid. I think it's got some really good premises. I do think that the pacing is where things kind of fall apart for me. I agree, Kyle, that there is a very 90s way of making movies. So if you go back and watch anything from like, I'll say 1989 to like the end of 2000, they all kind of have the same pacing issue. And the director, Alex Proyas, he has a tendency to make movies that have really weird pacing and some really strange editing. So it's not uncommon for you to kind of experience those things. But for me, I just, you know, kind of rewatching it again and removing some of that nostalgia, some of the slower moments really got to me more than they normally do. I also, and this is just a personal thing for me, and we can debate this for a second if you want, but I can't stand, and this is a 90s thing too, I can't stand the kid trope. Those things just irritate the hell out of me. She's doing everything she can. It can't rain all the time. It's a great line. I love it. Uh-huh. I know why she's there, but I'm perfectly fine with deleting her completely and just letting the movie roll on without her, because the kid thing just, I don't know. It just irritates
me. Would you want the cop to replace the kid though? Because I felt like the cop and the kid teaming up and then with Eric, that lent it a whole level of, you know, like that made them kind of a team. And that was part of the coolness of it, was that this was a gothic horror thing that had like the guy in the chair and the sidekick. And it was kind of cool to have like an actual team. And yeah, no, I completely 150% agree with you in the idea of kids in these movies can be garbage. And I think as the film kind of progressed longer, she did start to annoy me a little bit. But in the beginning, like they couldn't have deleted her completely. I'm going to say that if they'd halved her appearance, like halved it, cut her out of the final climax and just left her with her mom, that would have been better. Because while I get why she needed to be in it, and because she plays such a huge role in the sequel, I get kind of where they were coming from. But if they had left her with her mom and solved that whole problem, I would have been fine with that. But I think out of all of the kids we've seen in superhero movies, from her to Robin in Batman Forever, because he remains a child. So you have all she's one of the better ones, honestly. I will say that. She's one of the better ones. There's no great way to look at it, but she's one of the better ones.
I'll take that trope over the guy in the chair trope that every superhero movie has these days, you know? Yeah. But I definitely get what you're saying though. I mean, yeah. But yeah.
I have a preference because I love noir. Noir is like one of my favorite genres. So I love a good hard-boiled detective. And I love that pairing of the guy in the chair, but the detective that like has to work the streets and is always one step behind the hero. But they're kind of working together, but they're not. I like that trope more than a child. It's a 90s trope that has never aged well for me. So it's just a personal beef that I have. And I think it does lend itself to slowing the film down. And I think you're right, mm-hmm. Kyle. I think if you, there is a reason for her to be in the film, right? So if you give her just enough to where once she reconciles with her mom, that's it. She doesn't need to be at the church. She doesn't need to be in the fight. Like there's no reason for her to be there whatsoever. I think it's slightly better, but that's part of my 3.5 stars. So let's move on. Let's talk about, because we kind of mentioned it a little bit, and then we will get to casting, I promise. But let's talk about directing and cinematography. Cause I think this is, I don't know that direction is where it shines, but I do think that cinematography, production design, overall gothic aesthetic, I think that this is where this is such a vibes pick with everything that it has going on for it. I mean, you could watch this movie on mute and honestly still just be dazzled by the visual imagery that you see. So let's start with you, Kenji, since you brought the visuals tonight. So we'll start with you.
Well, yes, visually, I love the fact that it has such a great, like, there's a great tangibility to the city. I mean, obviously, yes, it's Detroit. I get it. But besides that, it's obviously, this is like a fantastical, I mean, I don't know how much it's exaggerated, but it's a very horrible version of Detroit. And but you have that entire opening shot where, despite, you know, the movie, it has extremely well done miniature work of the city, yes, which you're like really surprised about. I'm like, oh my God, this is really well done. And then it's a really good comping. I love the, you were mentioning the cinematography. I absolutely love the some of the shots that they do, especially when like the action picks up. But one of my favorite shot is when, it's so brief, it's a blink and you'll miss it moment, but it's when Eric is running across the rooftops. And it's just like kind of like a tracking shot, and it's him as he's running past a bunch of stuff on the roof, and you just hear whoosh as he does it. And it's like, I don't know, something about it, it's just, it looks really cool, and it was just awesome. I absolutely loved it. And I absolutely agree, though, there are some directing choices where you're kind of we mentioned earlier, like the whole thing with the kid, in agreement also, as far as kids and superhero movies go, not the worst one. It's such a visually juicy movie. Like, if it, like, it, the city looks like the way it smells. You know, like, it's like a beautiful vision. It's such a great visual, like, way that they did it. Such a great world that they created just visually. It's so dense. I love it. Yeah. The only downside is you can't really watch the movie when it's sunny outside because it is so dark. So,
How you watch the movie is really important. Michael, yeah, what did you think about the directing and cinematography?
I loved it. I thought the directing, I think this is the first. This might have been the first time I'd ever heard of the director. I don't know if he had done any. I know he did Dark City, but that was afterwards.
We're gonna talk. I freaking love Dark City.
Yeah.
Anyways,
but he definitely.
I have his actual filmography up here. So he did. He did a movie called Spirits of the Air, Gremlins of the Clouds, which he wrote, directed, and produced. Then he directed The Crow. Then he did Dark City, Garage Days, iRobot, Knowing. And then I think Gods of Egypt Broken, and then he never directed again. So,
oh, Gods of Egypt did, I guess. That's why.
Gods of Egypt takes careers. Man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sure,
yeah,
did. Yeah, yeah, for the actors and the director, too. Yeah, so
it ended Alex Proyas. So.
Yeah. But after this movie, I was like a fan of his, and definitely wanted to watch Dark City after that. I mean, I was just definitely a fan. I like the look of it. The way the characters were, it felt like they could come from a place like this, you know, the way it was so, you know, just dark and dirty, and it's like I believe the characters would be inhabiting this world, so they did a great job with that. I agree with the part about the miniatures. I thought that was great. This is like before there was any like heavy like CG that we have today, you know. There's no volume, obviously, there's no like nothing like that, so what they were doing with 90s effects was great. Also the constant, the rain, it really added to it. I think this is also the movie that like got me into film noir. Because, you know, I at the time, I don't think I knew anything about that, but that, I kind of got into it because I started reading up and following, like, you know, cinema and stuff like that. So it really affected me as like, as a young person going into like starting to enjoy movies. And it directed me into the type of movies I would like to watch and directors that I would like to follow. And so that's what this directing and cinematography were meant to me. So
yeah, You guys both bring up really great points, and I agree. I think visually this is one of the better versions of almost any comic book adaption. I agree with the miniatures. I think that there's one of my favorite. I think this has some of the absolute best framing and shot composition of someone standing in front of an explosion. And I'll pit that against anything. That imagery of him walking away from an explosion in the background is just, it's magnificent. It's absolutely incredible. And it trumps any visual effects, CGI, any of that stuff. Like even today you watch it and you're like, that's cool. Like, no matter what, you're just like, yeah, that's freaking cool. And I want to see that all the time. That's awesome. I also love what you talked about, Michael, where it really does. There's an strong undertone of film noir kind of built into this. And so if you're not familiar with that type of style, this is a great introduction. Introducing it with a gothic horror visual, and really kind of building that production design of like this dirty, grimy place where our hero has to do kind of immoral things to get his revenge. Like those things are all built into that film noir, and the way that this kind of frames that and delivers this just gorgeous cinematography of darkness and rain. You really do feel like you're transported into this world. And even characters who feel larger than life, like Top Dollar, and really the whole gangster crew, all of them, you know, they're all playing it up. They're all absolutely hamming it up, and none of these people are real. But at the same time, kind of like what you guys were both saying, you do feel like they live here. Like it makes sense in the world that they're creating. So the world that they build. And I think this is a great movie where if you don't know what shot composition is, if you don't know what cinematography is, if you don't know what production design looks like, this is an incredible film to just watch. I would say this and Dark City are two films that really capture just this vision that's in he falls off it all entirely. And that's not a knock on like iRobot. I like iRobot a lot, but these two films are really where I think he thrives as a director, because he really brings those worlds to light. Dark City is just, it's an absolute mind fuck, but it's so, it's so beautiful. It's another movie that you can just like The Crow, you can put on mute and just be dazzled by what you're watching. It doesn't matter if it makes sense or not. Because it's just so cool to watch, and it's a great introduction for someone who wants to understand what it takes to make film, what it takes to actually bring a vision to life, what it takes to create visuals practically, which is something I am a huge fan of. So when it comes to cinematography, I think this movie's excellent. I think this and Dark City are Alex Proyas' two best films. Kyle, how do you feel about the directing and the cinematography?
First of all, I think what the three of you guys are looking for is you're looking for the film that you can play at an avant-garde party in the middle of New York City with a giant brick wall so that you can flash the movie on the giant brick wall while everyone drinks very pretentious drinks.
I love
that
it.
That is the kind of movie you're looking
That's
for.
That's my cinematic dream. Yeah, That's my movie theater.
You're looking for the outdoor theater, but see, that's just it for me. Like everyone else in Southern California, I fancy myself something of an artist, and it's joking, kidding, fake laugh, real pain. This film, and I am including, you have to understand when I include these things, I am including the sequel because to me they are a packaged set. But this movie in particular, just the way that it was shot, the way that it was seen, and the look and the feel of the characters, how it all came together, spoke to young Kyle's mind and said, this is the kind of world I want to write about. I want to write about gritty, dark, realistic, dystopian-esque characters in this world that's larger than life. Mm-hmm. And where you can feel, because in one of the things that I don't think people talk about enough in movies like this is that while you have these larger than life characters, much like Hitchcock discussing Rear Window, there are all of these people in the buildings around them that just to me project this very sense of weird comfort and safety. Like there's all these terrible things going on outside, but if you're in one of those little windows, your life is going on and it's probably just as exciting, but you're still able to kind of have your little nest of humanity against this big, broad, wide world. Mm-hmm. And for 8-year-old me, that really spoke to me for some reason. And it has influenced, from production design to cinematography, it has influenced every single aspect of my just weird comfort places and like artistic styles, things that I like. Not the gothic, not the look, not the physical look of the people in it, but just the places and the scenes and the stuff that people interact with. I'm much happier in a dingy sidewalk that smells vaguely like cigarette smoke, where there's people having those avant-garde parties up above, drinking the pretentious drinks, watching the movies, and somebody is going through the most horrific day of their life on the streets below because of this movie, The Crow. And I don't think that that was what production designer Alex McDowell ever intended, but sir, I'm sorry that my brain came out. But yeah, no, that's literally, this movie shaped why I'm happy, what made me happy as a person, in addition to what I what write about and create as an artist.
Yeah, no, I love that. I love the parallels of kind of taking some of that Hitchcockian world building, because he does do that very well. I think of things like Rear Window, Rope, where you have all of these characters that are just existing in the frame, and they're basically oblivious to what is happening, but they're all here. They're all living in this world. And I think The Crow does that very, very well. I think, again, Alex Proyas, when we talk about his direction, I think Dark City and this movie do both of those really, really well. So not just the aesthetic, not just the vibe that you're looking for, but also just every frame feels lived in. Outside of a couple pacing issues, it does feel like this world exists, even if it exists in fantasy. So I really like that. Now, let's get to the real bread and butter, because we're going to wrap up here pretty soon. Let's talk about casting. I wanted to hold this off because I think we can wax poetic about Brandon Lee for the next 10, 15 minutes. Let's talk about it. Let's talk about the casting. Michael, we'll start with you. How do you feel about the casting for this film? And it can be all Brandon Lee. You don't have to talk about anybody else.
I'll try to talk about some of the other people cast too, but Brandon Lee was the main reason I watched this movie, obviously. Was a big fan of his and his father, obviously. And then when I saw what the Crow graphic novel looked like, I was like, I don't know if he could pull that off. But then he started seeing, the previews of like what he'd look like. I'm like, oh yeah, he can pull it off. It's like he definitely, and I think he was in a band too. So like, I think he fit the persona of Eric Draven. I thought that was just perfect casting. Aside from him, the only other person I knew going into the movie was Ernie Hudson, obviously. I thought he played, just the run-of-the-mill cop. Good. It was good to see him in it. Michael Wincott is probably, after this movie, I started following his career too. He was also in, I think, The Three Musketeers. He was the bad guy in that. He just has that look, and it was really fun to see him. I think he was recently in Nope. And that's when I saw him in there. I was like, oh yeah, from The Crow. Like
He's
even
so
to this
good.
day,
He's
I
so
go
good.
back to his role in The Crow,
That
so.
3-year run that you're talking about with The Crow, Three Musketeers, and Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves, where he's just the same villain in all three, and you're just like, I love that. I will watch this man do the exact same role for the next 10
And he's
years.
always
Like,
fighting with
and
swords,
he's always so, he's so good. I love it.
He was definitely good. Bai Ling, oops, seen her in a couple of other films. So it's a nice little thing there. And then the rest of the gang were, I mean, they were really well done. I think my favorite of the gang was probably Tintin, just because he had the knives and everything. And I thought that was a really well realized character. Like, he had a specialty. So it was really cool to see him in there. I mean, it just felt like people that were from Detroit and like in that time of, like, they cast pretty well, I thought. And I think and the role of Sarah, obviously the little girl, was also very big. I don't think she did anything after this movie.
No,
But I know the
her
character
IMDb is
lived
full.
on. Yeah, the character went on to do the sequel. So I thought that was pretty cool. The casting was great. I mean, definitely Brandon Lee, he stole the show. It was a fitting final movie. I mean, it would be kind of, as much as I like, what was the other one he did with Dolph Lundgren, Showdown Little Tokyo, He did that with Dolph Lundgren, and I think he did Rapid Fire.
Rapid Fire is pretty terrible, but he's great in it.
Yeah, he's great in it. So, but if I had to pick one of those to be his last movie, The Crow is like, if that was his last movie, that was the perfect last movie. So,
Kenji, what about you? How do you feel about the casting?
First of all, the casting was phenomenal. I also just want to just give a quick shout out because one of the thugs in the big fight scene is Jeff Imada, who's also happens to be a martial arts legend, and I've actually had the opportunity to train with him at the same studio, and he's a very cool guy. And this was one of those things I found out, like, it was one of those things where you're watching and you're going, it looks like Jeff, and then you look at the cast list and you're like, oh, it is him. So I definitely want to talk to him about this. But I mean, first of all, the entire gang is great. I love Skank. He's so hilarious. Just the way that he's always talking super fast. Just how freaking Michael Wincott has to be like, I reckon we should just video record all of this and just play it back in slow motion. Like, it's so good. I love everyone was so well. I love the pawn star, the pawn shop owner, just who utters the greatest phrase in all of cinema history. Shit on me! Top Dollar, Michael Wincott. It's one of those things where when I first was watching it, I thought it was a little bit over the top as a kid, just because how Eric Draven, Brandon Lee was just playing Eric Draven so like subdued and kind of like only kind of going, even his crazy moments, he's kind of subdued, which I think is really creepy in my opinion, just how he's like destroying that entire pawn shop. And he's not like he's raging, but he's not like typical raging where he's like shouting and like doing, he's just very quietly just with eyes wide open, just, and now you're gonna tell me where Tintin and all his pals are, you know? It's like,
that was great. That was a great impression.
The makeup helped. I don't think I can make any change to the casting, honestly. Like, everyone played such a great part. Like, even Ernie Hudson, I mean, me going into the movie, it was just kind of like, hey, it's the guy from Ghostbusters, you know, like, that Twinston. Was like my, Twinston, exactly. I mean, that's how much of a kid I was. I didn't even know, like, any of their names. Like, I only knew Slimer, and I knew that the rest of them were the Ghostbusters. I didn't know anybody's name. We could go on for hours about Brandon Lee alone. Just, I love that what we got to watch him do in this movie was definitely a lot more action oriented and really kind of showed off a lot of the skills that he had. Cause I think he did one other movie prior to this. I'm sure, Mikey, you know which movie I'm talking about. Like, he has like an entire fight scene. He does an entire fight scene in the kitchen where it's not a bad fight scene, but as like, but when you compare it to like what his father has done, it's kind of, it's very yawn inducing. So to like watch him do something so badass as what he did in this movie, you know, like, maybe there were some doubles in some of them, but the fact that you could still tell that was still him doing a lot of it was great. So like, I mean, I just think everyone did a great job in this movie. Like, as over the top and as ridiculous as this world is, they made it a very tangible, believable world.
Yeah.
I feel like that's kind of the problem that we run into with a lot of superhero movies and stuff like that, because they tend to be such fantastical worlds, so over the top, and a lot of times it's really hard to accept and that these characters can potentially exist in real life. Like, I don't want to point fingers or anything, but Quantumania, the whole Derek, I could not buy him for a second. I love MODOK, but I couldn't like Derek for a second.
It's rough. So it's rough.
So but that's it goes to show that like you can make a, I'm sure there are other films out there, but just as an example, because we're talking about The Crow right now, it goes to show that you can have a comic book film with fantastical feet in a fantastic over the top exaggerated world, but you can still have it be something that you can that is acceptable, you know, and that you can be, you can buy being like, okay, like Top Dollar, like that, as ridiculous as Top Dollar is, as ridiculous as Micah is, you can accept and buy that these people would exist.
Well, and it's Wincott is just that dude. He's just that guy.
Is it taped down? Well, I'm gonna eat it.
There, I want to just real quick. I just want to read off this guy because this movie is comprised of that guys. Where like I'm gonna say their names, and you're not gonna know who they are, and then you're gonna go look them up and be like, "Holy shit, it's that guy." That's literally what this movie is comprised of. Because we already mentioned Ernie Hudson, Michael Wincock, Bai Ling, Anna Levine, David Patrick Kelly, Lawrence Mason, Michael Massey, Tony Todd, John Polito.
Like, I was waiting for you guys to mention Tony Todd. I was like, you were mentioning Tony Todd as nerdy glasses wearing accountant man. He's like,
he was great. You know,
The
cast and fun fact, and I'll let you guys guess, and then we'll get to your thoughts, and then we'll do final thoughts and talk about the last part. Does anybody know who the actual stunt double was for Brandon Lee? It was Chad Stahelski. Yes. Yes, that's right. Mr. John Wick director, coordinator himself, Mr. Chad Stahelski. Yep.
Cool. Wow. Yep.
That is badass. I mean, it's no wonder that set's, I also hear that set is extremely safe. It goes to, it makes sense now why that the John Wick sets were so safe.
Wow. Yeah, it blew my mind when I learned that. I was like, no way. But yeah, he was Brandon Lee's stunt double.
That's insane.
That's great. Wow.
Yeah.
That is so cool.
Yeah. All right. So Kyle, give us your thoughts a little bit on the cast, and then we'll talk about the reboot. We'll get final thoughts, and then that'll be it.
Tony, how do you not go from B-man with, you know, heart's desire, hook for a hand, to glasses, nerdy accountant man Gage? I mean, that was just amazing. All of the characters in the gang, Michael Wincott, now I'm sitting here picturing Michael Wincott in Nope and imagining that's what Top Dollar would have been. I was just this old cinematographer man who got eaten by an alien. I knew that this was coming.
He mellowed out.
Violent, but you know, my two thoughts about casting are, Brandon Lee, to me in this, everyone talks about his fight scenes, but to me in this, I saw him not just do fight scenes, but he could have been in a comedy when he's talking to Ernie Hudson in the thing. He could have been in a comedy. He had some like really gentle nature in there. He could have been in a rom-com because of the way when he's like sitting there and being romantic with the girl in the kitchen. Like, there was a whole bunch of other characters that we didn't get to see. And everyone, no disrespect to all of you gentlemen, you lovely people, but you know, it's like, fight scene. But I'm like, nah, the tragedy is that we didn't get to see him be the gentle, the comedic guy or the gentle person in the rom-com.
Yeah.
And then the other thing.
I'm so glad you brought, just real quick, because that is what separates him from his father.
Yeah.
Rapid Fire is him trying to fill his father's shoes and do the martial arts thing. And The Crow is him demonstrating that he has an infinite amount of talent to be able to fill all kinds of roles if he were to continue his career. Because you're absolutely right. It's his subtle moments. It's his snark when like he's got that man on fire snark when he's taking people out. And it's fantastic. And I don't think Bruce Lee had the capability of doing those types of things. I enjoy Bruce Lee a lot, but this is him really coming into his own. So I'm glad you brought that up.
He has, you know what, when I was thinking about it, because I was thinking about what Kenji was saying, and then I thought about that, and I was just like, he's giving young, like he's giving that same kind of humor-esque as Adam Driver to me. I don't know what it is, but like that, I could kick ass, but also I can be like multiple characters. But that's just me. Then the other thing, the final thing I wanted to say about casting, I question, because you guys are talking about how with CGI and stuff, how casting kind of gets lost in the Marvel movies. I have to wonder if it is a type of comic book thing as opposed to a a type of comic book thing as opposed to MCU. Because I just finished reading Deadpool versus Wolverine Greatest Hits because I wanted to prep for the movie. And it's very, the MCU stuff is very focused on individuals existing in a world that is cool, but you never really see it. Like Deadpool and Wolverine come onto the scene, and I just want to see Deadpool and Wolverine duke it out. But I know that there's 50 million people in the background doing things. So I guess my message would be continue adapting things the Marvel and the DC way, which is about these gods among men. But also bring us the gods among men truly interacting amongst the mortals. You can do that with major league comics. I mean, you can do that with Superman. There's a lot of stories with that. You can do that with Captain America. There's a lot of stories about that. But the movies that people have chosen to adapt are the ones that are focused on big, larger than life personalities that are hitting each other. And it's like you can, it's a choice. It's a choice. And I think that people lean towards the easy way out when it comes to the MCU. And to Marvel and to the X-Men, where you have just those people who will just like battle each other and be larger than life personalities. Also, I really want to see the Kenji do that
Oh
impression.
yeah. All right. So we've got a
This will be
comment.
good.
Liza Dean Official, thank you so much. So she says Kenji is a master impressionist. It's not the makeup. Ask him for anyone. He can do it. It's nuts. Kenji, can you do an impression of your favorite moment from this movie, even if it involves fight choreo? And so she actually claimed, quote, that film. So now you must say your favorite quote from the movie, and we're going to ask you to do it in whatever crow version you need to.
Yeah. I think my favorite line is a problem is they're all dead. They just don't know it yet. And also my favorite line is that gasoline I smell.
It's so good.
That's
He did the
awesome.
eyebrow lift and everything. That was amazing. That was so
Love
great. Thank you. That was a great claim. Thank you so much. That was
it.
amazing. All right,
Of
so we're gonna wrap up here pretty quickly, but just real quick, I want to get everybody's thoughts on this new reboot that's coming down the pike. So there is a reboot of The Crow, starring what is it? Bill? It's Bill, right? There's like 18
Skarsgård,
of
Bill
them. There's like
Skarsgård,
19 Skarsgårds. So it's Bill Skarsgård who, I definitely think he's trying to dip into this action part of his career. I despise Boy Kills World. I think it's the most irritating. It's one of the most grating movies I've seen in the last year. I couldn't stand it. Not his fault, but it makes me very fearful. I feel like there is a I think we've had enough bad sequels of this movie that it doesn't need the reboot. And I don't know that Bill Skarsgård is the guy to step into the shoes. And while I know it's going to be something different, it feels like it's going for this. It's trying to capture the same thing that doesn't exist anymore. Like there's a time capsule with The Crow in it, and it's especially when it comes to not just the visuals, but you talk about like the soundtrack, right? Which we didn't even get to, but like the soundtrack is so much a
Oh,
part of this
good.
film, and this new movie feels like it wants to take the 90s soundtrack and then apply it to 2024 visual effects and create like a modern aesthetic. And I just don't know that that works. He looks like he looks like what's his name?
Jared Leto.
Yes, he looks like Jared Leto and MKG or whoever that or Machine Gun Kelly. That's who it is.
Oh, yeah.
He looks like a mix of them, and those are like two of the most irritating human beings on the face of the earth. So I just can't, I don't know. I am very, very, very nervous if you can't tell. But Michael, how do you feel about this reboot coming down?
So I've never seen any of the other Crow movies. I said I saw the show, but I never saw the sequel movies. And I think to me that the movie is too, I hold it too high up there on a pedestal to like watch anything, any sequel or any remake. I was kind of interested in this one. I don't know why, but I was kind of interested in this one. But then I saw the footage and it looked, and for something I thought was, it's too clean. It's too bright. Like, it's too polished. Like, it doesn't feel like the Crow to me. So I just like, I don't fucking watch it. So, you know, it's just, it doesn't have the same feel to me.
Yeah, it has. You know what it has? I call it the Netflix sheen, where there's no sense of geography, right? There's no frame of reference for where anyone is at any given time, because everything is so polished and so visual effects heavy that you get no sense of where anybody is, because everything is just, all the lights are turned on way too bright.
Exactly.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, I totally agree. Kenji, how do you feel about this reboot?
So I'm not happy about it. I mean, first of all, originally when I first heard, they've announced this reboot for years, even before we finally got the photos of Bill Skarsgård. I mean, originally they talked about Jason Momoa being Eric Draven, and there were actually photos. I actually have a photo saved somewhere of Jason Momoa in their first test makeup for The Crow. And it, first of all, it looks horrifying in a good way, in a great way. It's like one of those things where you're like, oh, I would not open my door if that man was outside. If I was the pawn shop owner and that man was knocking at my door, I would not open the fucking door. He looked phenomenal. It looked great. And I felt like, you know, maybe he wouldn't have like the same acting subtlety that Brandon does, because let's face it, Momoa just doesn't have that. Yeah. But like, I still felt like it would have been a good take on it, possibly. It's this visual rendition that they're trying to go with this new remake that I don't understand why they did it, because with the old Jason, with the Jason Momoa version, it was clearly obvious, okay, he still has the long hair, he's doing the very iconic makeup, they're trying to, he is going to be Eric Draven, but they're still trying to, they're not trying to fuck with the picture, you know? It's like, but then like you have this new version and it's like, oh, okay, he kind of looks like he's on the poster for Suicide Squad. And then you find out his name is also Eric Draven. You're kind of like, there have been other Crows in the comic books. You know, we've had Joshua, we've had, you know, like there have been more than just one Crow. So a part of me was like, you should have just made him one of the characters that have already been the Crow, or make an original one. You know, it borrowing elements from the two that we already have, just because they keep saying, we're not trying to shit on Brandon's legacy, we're trying to, you know, maintain it, we want to preserve it, and this, then the other. It's like, well, if you really wanted to do that, don't call him Eric, okay?
True.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. Kyle, how about you?
Somewhere in Hollywood, deep in the bowels and recesses of the studio, and I want to say it's Lionsgate, but I don't think it's Lionsgate. I think it's Universal. Is it Lionsgate?
Yeah, it's Lionsgate.
Okay. Somewhere deep in the bowels of the studio is the intern that came up with the AI prompt, give me a 90s action film, John Wick style, and include references to giant ballet theater, since that's dramatic. Nostalgic property for aging comic book fans. Sorry, I include myself here, aging comic book fans. And property that will be recognizable with enough history that people will see it and will say, ah, yes, that's like the thing that the person who I didn't talk to in high school knew about, and then they wore it and it was great to them. But maybe I can see it with my AMC Stubbs pass, because I don't want to pay money for it, but I already pay for the AMC Stubbs pass.
Yeah.
So that was,
and then
that
they
was,
hit enter.
Yeah.
And then they hit enter. Yeah. Yeah. No, and see, that's, and see, so I could easily very much buy that there is an intern who was given that directive by an executive, and the executive was like, great. Yeah, let's put Bill, because as someone who's interviewed Bill Sarsgaard, I don't see Bill Sarsgaard playing this role. I just don't.
It's a weird casting choice.
You know who he would be good as? Top Dollar. Or one of the gang.
Oh, yeah. Sure. Yeah,
oh,
I can
yeah,
see that.
Absolutely.
I would buy him as top dollar 100%.
I'd totally buy him as top dollar.
Like, if he wanted to do the connection, he could be like his like kid or like a disgruntled child or whatever, or something, and just make him like, you know, super desperate to achieve his father's legacy, but he's a whiny brat who has too much money and a giant car. And just rolls around and goes to ballet
just,
studios.
Look, dude, just be the villain from John Wick 4 without the accent, and that is like that is who you should be in the Crow remake, not Eric Draven. So I think we all have the same.
Let me be Eric Draven.
Yes,
there you go.
It. Let him do it.
You got my vote.
Reshoot.
I'm half two. I'm half two. Let's do it.
Yeah, I love it. Let's make it happen. All right. Well, sorry to end on such a downer, but we do have to wrap up, guys. Thank you so much for joining us. I know the original is still holding a great place in our hearts, even though we all have slightly different ratings. I think we can all agree on a lot of the same things that make this movie great. And there is a reason it is a cult classic. So thank you guys so much. I really enjoyed talking this movie with you. Let's start with Michael. Where can everybody find you?
I'm at GC47 on all socials. And yeah, I'll see you there.
Awesome. Kenji?
You can find me on Instagram, and I don't know if it's still around, but the TikTok. You can find me there at Kenjinator. You can also find me on Twitch at The Kenjinator. So check that out. And on Sundays, I am part of a Dungeons & Dragons campaign called The Gatewalker Saga at KD in LA. Check that out.
Awesome. Awesome. And Kyle?
You can find me Carolyn, Carolyn, N-I-N, Fandom, Fandom, on the Bird app, because I'm still on the Bird app and I'll probably die on the Bird app. And then I'll pick my TikTok and say you can find me at Caroline, Caroling, _cosplay, Cosplay, on TikTok, because TikTok is also not going away. I refuse to let TikTok go away because it's the platform I have the most followers on. I refuse to
let TikTok go away. There you go.
That's fair. You guys can find me at DRock Comedy, that's DROK Comedy on Instagram, the Bird app, Letterboxd, Threads. And then, yes, I'm an old boomer, or not a boomer, millennial. I don't know what I am, but I'm still on Facebook. So you can find me on Facebook as well. And I also have not gotten onto the TikToks yet. So I'll save that one. But that's like five places you can find me. And then you can find all of my reviews on nerdbot.com. So, guys, thank you so much. Have a wonderful evening. And we will talk at you guys in the next one.